Hello, and welcome to The Worm. I'm your host, Ward Kamak, and today we're speaking with a friend and peer of mine here at St. Andrews, Cole Kiefer. Cole has done a lot throughout his life thus far, and I'm excited to get into the episode. One of his ventures is being a podcaster himself, as Cole is the host and producer of a podcast called Across the Board. So consider this a crossover episode of St. Andrews Podcasts. Hi, Cole.
Dude, I'll tell you, this is so funky being on the other side of the microphone for once and listening somebody else introduce you. I've done the very same thing so many times, you know, writing the script, reading it, you know, tweaking things left and right. I'm very excited for this crossover, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Which do you prefer?
I don't know. I mean, give me about 10, 15 minutes here, and then I'd be happy to tell you. You know, maybe it's kind of nice not having to prep questions and whatnot, but, you know, it's also fun being the driver of the boat here and there.
True.
So, TBD.
Okay. So to get us started, will you tell us first where you're from?
I'm from Jersey. You know, people give me a lot of funky looks when I say that. First, a lot of British people think it's the island, first of all, before, because I just don't even say New Jersey, because, like, people from the States, like, you just say Jersey, and then people scowl at you, usually. But you got to have thick skin. But, yeah, New Jersey.
Yeah, that's funny that they think you're from Jersey, the island. But that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I don't blame them for that. Yeah, yeah. Until, I mean, to be fair, I guess the second a word comes out of my mouth, it's pretty clear that I may be American as well. So, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what do you study?
Management.
Okay, and then what do you spend the majority of your time doing outside of academics in St. Andrews?
I gotta be honest, I don't think there's one thing that completely dominates my time, which is maybe a good thing, maybe a bad thing. Like anybody else, love going to the gym. Haven't really gotten the whole diet part down, which I've now learned is arguably more important than the gym, but that's not very fun. I'm not a big vegetable advocate. But on top of that, like, doing things like the podcast, you know, having free time is exactly why I, you know, was able to pursue things like that. Trying to play golf, failing super hard. My roommate's a great player. He's like almost a scratch player. So basically, you know, free built-in private lessons whenever I just go with him. But I'm trying to become competent. I'm not an angry golfer, so I don't need to be good. If I three putt every hole, I really don't mind.
Did you golf before you got to St. Andrews?
God,
or?
No.
Not
God,
at all.
No. I don't have the patience for sports like that. I really don't. And nobody in my family golfs. I feel like, oh, a lot of people start golfing because their dad golfs. And they're like, oh, okay, son, we're going to go golfing or whatever. Nobody in my family ever golfs. So for me, if I were to have, I would have had to completely, like, find it by myself. And it was never something that I was interested in enough to pursue that independently.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you have... Across the Board is your second podcast / your first podcast rebranded.
Yep.
What was the premise of your first podcast?
Yeah, first podcast, I've always been interested in finance. And I love the open, like, speaking. Like, I don't know, podcasts, I've always been kind of infatuated with them, listened to a million of them. And I was like, okay, if I have a podcast where I'm forced to talk into a microphone and hopefully sound somewhat competent, I need to do research and understand and, like, learn things. And I've done it with so many different friends of mine that have come on for little episodes or streaks of episodes. And it was basically just like talking about the markets, you know, nothing definitively. I'm not a financial professional, right? It was always framed as my opinion and also just like what I, you know, saw from what was happening. And it was, you know, it was fun. Like, I remember there's a lot of Barstool podcasts, and Barstool has a mixed reputation depending on how you look at it. But what I do like is it's very colloquial. It's easy to listen to.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, finance can be a really daunting thing. I know it has been for me, trying to understand everything. And, you know, there's a lot of big words and models and math, and you're like, what's going on here? And so I really like colloquial, you know, podcasts that break down kind of complex things. There's like a couple of physicists that are super good at it, where it's like they'll explain string theory to you and you'll actually understand what they're talking about after 20 minutes, and you'll actually be able to follow. And I was like, you know, finance could probably be made similarly. And so, yeah, that's kind of was the premise of the podcast. And then I kind of realized, I was like, okay, it's super narrow. I was like, there's a lot of interesting people in this town that I want to have conversations with. And it's not necessarily about finance. And then that would break the mold of the podcast. And also the podcast was co-started with one of the investment societies in town. So it was always my podcast, but I was doing it to highlight some of the things that we were doing in that group as well.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, I kind of want to make this my own thing. So come last semester, I was like, okay, let me rebrand the name, rebrand everything else. And yeah, so that was how Across the Board was born. I was like, you know, it's kind of an easy to remember name. It is as broad as, you know, a name across the board, right? Like, that's the point. We can do this, we can do that. Like, there's no definitive, you know, MO of what the podcast can or can't be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I brought one of my really good friends on, Coley Pfeiffer, to co-host, because he came on for an episode on archaeology.
I listened to that.
Knows a ton about it. Super fascinating. Very well-spoken guy, really smart. And I was like, you know, if you want to do this with me, because, you know, he's a super creative guy as well, and he was super down. So that's how it was born. And, you know, it's funny, too, like Coley and Cole kind of rolls off the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
For the longest time in first year, everyone thought I was him and he was me.
Really? So,
because his name's Coley Pfeiffer. My name's Cole Kiefer.
Yeah.
And so everyone only knew each other from social media.
That's so funny.
I met him when I was going to play golf. I just had my clubs on. I was going to the driving range and he was riding his bike and he just like stopped in the street and looked at me. I was like, who is this guy? Like, what's going on? He's like, you're Cole Kiefer. I was like, what? I was like, who are you? I was like, oh, maybe this is some normal first year thing. I was like, I don't know.
And
he's like,
you.
He's like, everyone thinks you're me. And I was like, who are you? I was like, you still haven't told me your name. This is like, is this like a social experiment? Like, what's going on right now?
Oh, my God.
But yeah, that's how I met him. And we've been, you know, really good friends ever since.
Wow.
So yeah, just kind of the stars seemed to align for that for the last semester.
Wow.
Feel like a fun project.
That's so cool. I didn't realize that you guys were co-hosts.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but you didn't do your last episode with him. That was just you, right?
No, I did do it with him. With Saffron.
Yeah, no.
Okay. He was on for that. I introduced the show and whatnot, but yeah, no, he was on that. And you know, like next episode, we have a marine biologist on, a student, Alex Holmes, really, really smart guy, super interesting. Coley has a ton of diving experience and stuff on that. So it's mm-hmm. great because like I can lean on him in that episode because, you know, I'll be the vibes guy, I'll be the energy guy, but you know, Coley has all the diving experience, so he's gonna be the one that, you know, able to ask all the competent questions and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that should be cool as well. But yeah, I think it's nice having somebody else that kind of keeps you accountable. But yeah, I did the solo podcast for a long time and that's a lot of fun too.
Yeah, that's like exactly what I did. How I had Fireside Chats was through the Roosevelt group, and then now I've rebranded into my own thing and our podcasts have very similar premises.
Well, that's the thing, you know, podcasts, even if they have similar premises, you know, they're made not by the premise but by the host.
Mm-hmm.
So like depending on your vibe and your style of interviewing and talking and conversation, that's ultimately, in my opinion, what kind of makes the archetype of your podcast.
Totally. So this is just kind of out of my own curiosity, but what goes into your prep for episodes and how do you choose who to interview, especially if they're people like, because your podcast is so varied in its topics, if it's someone you've never spoken to, like how do you approach them?
Yeah, so I like to book out a big slot in the recording room for a couple of hours because usually I want to talk to the person for 5 or 10 minutes before we start recording just so that I can kind of, if I know them already, then of course that's different. But like, you know, Coley knew Saffron, he invited her on. I'd never met her before. So mm-hmm. for a couple of minutes, we just talked. I kind of got her vibe a little bit and I'd already given her the questions beforehand. So usually that's what I do. I write up a question list, right? Or first, if I don't know anything about the person, I'll look on the internet, see what I can find. Like Saffron has a website to display her art. So she has like an about me page. Read that. Let's get the full bullet points of like the art journey, life story, so that I know, you know, I can ask educated questions.
Yeah.
And then build out the questions list at a high level. And then although I have the questions list, I seldomly actually use it that often because I'm a very just like impromptu, like let's see where the conversation takes us. But it's always good to have fallback things. And it's always good. You want to make sure that the guest is comfortable and make sure that, hey, is there anything you don't want to talk about? Is there anything, you know, just kind of get the array of what their range is beforehand. And you'll see it's cool, especially for people that haven't been on podcasts. It usually throughout the interview, there's like exponential growth of them getting comfortable on the microphone because
totally.
You start to forget that the microphone's there
after,
you know, a little while. But yeah, so that's kind of how I prep. I try not to over prep as well because then I think I've done that in the past. And then I think you kind of try to force the conversation in a certain way to like suit the research that you've done or the questions you want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to feel as natural and colloquial as possible.
It's so great to like speak to someone, especially because I feel like my kind of niche is talking to people about things that they're really educated in and knowledgeable about, which I feel like yours is obviously similar. But it's great to watch somebody tell you all about something that they love, and you can see how much they love it in their body language and how they speak about it, even if it's something that like you've never thought about, or you could potentially think it's the most boring thing in the world, but like their passion for it and their love for it makes you excited about it as well.
So I actually have a story about that, like that you're bang on. And I remember back in high school, I was never a science guy. Like I was competent at science, but like it never like blasted out to me where I was like, yes, like biology, chemistry. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to do dimensional analysis.
What was your best class in high school?
Academically, or interest wise, or
both, either.
Funny enough, the highest grade I ever got was in a chemistry class.
Actually, same.
As funny as that is. But the class that I was most interested, honestly, this goes against literally everything that I just said. My favorite class in high school was physics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only because of the teacher and how mm-hmm. passionate he was. So it was a guy, Mr. Biller. What a guy. He's my favorite teacher, one of them that I've ever had. And, you know, he was an older gentleman who had a successful career. His sons had gone to my high school, and he came back to teach for a couple of years. And his passion bled through immediately. Physics can be as boring as, like, let's calculate a ball rolling down this ramp. Mm-hmm. He would, like, make up these intergalactic, like, sagas, like Star Wars, and be like, the Star Destroyer is coming here. We're going to calculate the velocity of, like, this. Or, like, what would it take to save the Earth with this shield or whatever at this? Like, he just made it so interactive and so fun. He came in every day with such an infectious attitude that I actually helped co-found a research and science club and started doing cool. research on astronomy. Whoa. And like von Neumann machines, which is like, again, so not my thing.
Uh-huh.
Like I've never branded myself as a science guy, and like literally his passion was so infectious that it made me passionate about it myself.
Yeah. Wait, so tell me about this science thing that you founded.
Yeah, so I had a buddy who was a year younger than me, Will Lee, one of the smartest guys I've ever met. He was like the real figurehead, and then I kind of, you know, joined alongside as like a co-president, but like he was the, you know, head honcho. Brilliant guy, you know, went to Stanford. He's, you know, I'll see him on the Forbes list one day.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the whole premise was we were going to throw like a science fair. At the end of the year, we had like kids at our school at Del Barton that were doing projects throughout the whole year, and we were going to have it. And then COVID hit, and we were like, ah, well, you know, we don't want to just give up on it. These kids have been working on projects all year. And then we kind of put our heads together. There were four of us who were like running it, two of my other peers, Stephen Daly and Jack Nelson, also really bright guys. And we decided to host a virtual science fair. And we were like, you know, we're not the only school that has a science fair. So we ended up hosting the largest virtual science fair in the state, in the country, I don't know. But Will actually went on Fox to talk on the news about it. And
the
White House also acknowledged our science fair as well. They're
what?
On their like, yeah, they posted it on their Instagram.
Oh my goodness.
Because we basically had like, oh God, I might totally embellish this. So I'm trying to remember exactly. We had something like, you know, maybe 30, 40 schools from New Jersey that participated, and we got a ton of professors from universities in the Northeast to be judges virtually. So, you know, everyone would like record their science fair. We built out a website. Everyone uploaded all of their, I think the website probably still exists, probably archived.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they uploaded their projects, and then the judges would go around and watch all of the projects and rate them. And then we had awards, and we were sponsored.
Wow.
So we had like, you know, I think we were sponsored by like Johnson & Johnson and a couple of other people.
Uh-huh.
But it was such a, like, again, me with a science fair is like wrong in my head. You know what I mean? And it literally stemmed from exactly what you talked about of, you know, just somebody who is really passionate about something that isn't interesting to a lot of people. And he made it absolutely fascinating. So that's why, like, I love astronomy. That's my favorite thing. If I could like do a minor or, you know, just like study something for passion, because I really do love finance, but like outside of that, I would totally study astronomy. I just think it's mm-hmm. fascinating.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah,
and I
know.
Think that's cool too, because it sounds like you were able to bring your abilities in more like a management perspective.
Big time management student over here.
but like managing people and like managing a project and being able to get something off the ground, because that's like obviously a huge undertaking, especially for a high schooler.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so happy there was four of us. And, you know, mm-hmm. we had Willie. He's my Albert Einstein. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So, yeah, you know, that was, but that was a really cool experience. And it was like a good way to end my senior year at university, or not university, in high school, when everything was, you know, being canceled left and right. And yeah. there were so many things to, like, be upset about, that was like a really cool, like, you know, golden, I guess, like, thing that stuck out of, you know, a lot of, you know, unfortunate events that were happening. So yeah, it was a big silver lining guy. That was definitely a silver lining of what happened in senior year of high school.
Absolutely. I forgot about science fairs. Like, I remember I was required to do them in from third to fifth grade in elementary school, and the first year that I did one was third grade, and it was a new school for me because we had just moved from Nashville to Suwannee. And the idea of having like a project that I had to work on stressed me out so much that my dad literally did it for me. Like, he didn't do it for me, but he came up with the idea and he was like, oh, this could be really cool. So the premises was that like I had different colors of Jell-O and I flavored them in ways that would confuse your brain. So like if you have red Jell-O, you might expect it to be cherry flavored. Or if you have yellow, it would probably be lemon. But like I put almond flavor in the lemon, and it's like then I had someone try it and tell me if it was what they had expected or not. And so it's easy to explain now. It's like now I understand what was going on, but at the time
that was an intellectual triumph that you had. That's like those jelly beans where it's like it looks the same, but it's either really good or really bad.
Yeah,
and you don't know which
that's
one you're
exactly
gonna
eat. What it was. Yeah, yeah. And but it wasn't my idea. Like my dad like found the idea on the internet and was like,
it's okay.
Oh, this might be a good idea.
You were never a kid if your parents didn't do at least one project for school for you.
True.
I had a project in like the third grade. I needed some like big poster board. I forget what we were presenting on. My mom did like the entire thing.
Yeah.
She brought in the poster board. I was like, you know what? You might as well present it. You come into class with me as my show and tell you do it. This is your project, not even mine.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But then I'd say in the later years, I did actually figure out what was going on. And then I made my own projects and could actually explain them myself. Whereas some of my friends definitely still had their parents doing it for them, and they know who they are.
they knew that we're throwing discs at everyone here. Yeah,
I remember.
That's right.
You
listening right now.
You also wrote a children's book.
Yes.
I have some questions about that. So I learned this about you, what, like a year ago when we first kind of got to know each other? And you were just like, oh, yeah, I wrote a children's book in high school because your brother,
yep,
right, is how many years younger than you?
So I have two younger brothers. One of them's 18, actually going over to Dublin next week because he might be going to Trinity or UCD.
Oh,
so
cool.
Going to look at that. And then the other one is way younger. I'm 12 years older than him, so he's 10.
Wow. And those, you guys have the same parents?
Yep, same parents. just 12 years apart.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so what was the process? Okay, this is a broad question. What was the process like? But like when you first decided to write the children's book, how old were you?
So that's making me do math. I want to say I was 17.
Was it like junior year?
It was my junior year of high school. So I was probably 16 or 17. Maybe when I started it, I was 16. By the time it was published, I was 17, something like that. And, you know, I was like, okay, I would read my brother children's books here and there, you know, because, you know, he's a kid. At that point, he was, you know, whatever, 5, 6. So, like, you still read him bedtime stories kind of thing. And every so often, I would do it. And I was like, you know, I think I could write one of these. And I was like, but what would I write it about? And it actually directly went back to what we were talking about before. And this was my junior year of high school when I was in physics. And I was like, I love science. Like, this is the most – I've never had this epiphany before. And so I was like, another thing that I've always loved is mythology. Ever since we had to read Percy Jackson, the first book, The Lightning Thief, in the sixth grade. And I remember finishing the whole book in like 2 days. And I was like, whoa. And then I found out it was a whole series. And then, you know, that starts that era. Great TV show, by the way. Just watched the season finale last week. Anyway, so I was like, okay, how can I take astronomy and how can I take mythology and combine them into a cohesive concept? And I was like, well, the planets are obviously all named after Roman and Greek gods. And, you know, they did that intentionally, of course. And I was like, there's such a simple concept. And this very well could have been done before, but I'd never seen anything like it, where all of the characteristics of the planets from a physical perspective match kind of the god itself.
Mm-hmm.
So think about Mars. Mars is also Ares, right? The Greek-Roman god of war. The planet's blood red. It could be as simple as that. You know what I mean? Like, look at Jupiter, named after Zeus. It is the biggest planet in the solar system. He's the king of the gods. There is massive lightning storms. You know, think of like that one spot, the solar spot that's super famous mm-hmm. for having incredible winds and storms. You know, just easy connections that you can make between the god and the planet. And it's a great way to learn about the god and to learn about the planet. So it's like a dual education of two things that don't totally seem like they go together that actually kind of go together.
Mm-hmm.
Neptune, Poseidon, it's a blue planet. Easy to sell to a child. You know what I mean? Like, it looks like an ocean. Obviously it's not, but it just looks like a big ocean. So I like to think, and obviously, you know, they were definitely way more intellectual than this, but I like to think of like the Romans just like looking up in the sky and be like, you know, that planet's really blue. We can name it after the god of the ocean. And I'm mm-hmm. like, boom, look at that connection. And so it's a pretty long for a children's book. It's like 46 pages or Whoa. Something like that. But it's not a dense read.
Uh-huh.
It's meant for, you know, like a five-year-old, which is how old my brother was around that time. And yeah, it just goes planet by planet, explains the planet itself, and then explains the god that's associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great experience. I'm not an artist. So, you know, it was figuring out like, okay, I need to go on whatever I used, Etsy or Fiverr. Is Fiverr what it's called?
I don't know.
There's one of those. There's like an artistic website where like you can commission people to do things.
So I
storyboarded out what I wanted. So like I put all the images together and I had something in my head. I'm just not artistically talented enough to actually make that into a reality. I wrote the whole script, worked with an illustrator, and then, you know, my parents helped me out a little bit with like finding the right publisher and whatever else, and then we published it. But yeah, it was my biggest regret not pursuing it. Because I published it, and then in my head I was like, okay, done. Like, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
I reached the apex of the mountain. And, you know, you're 17, and I didn't want to be the center of attention, and I felt like I was almost, like, embarrassed of the achievement, which was, like, super random. But, like, I didn't tell people about it. Like, I didn't tell people about it so much that I literally forget that I did it sometimes. Like, people,
yeah.
like, it just doesn't even come to mind. And I wish, and I think I will pursue it now, because I was just talking to my dad about it last week. I actually think you asking me to come on the podcast and you're like, oh, we could talk about the book, actually made me sit down and think about it again.
Really?
Yeah, because wow. I was like, it's such a shame. It's such a cool thing that I genuinely love doing, because I love taking, complex topics and like explaining them colloquially, exactly like what
totally.
I said about what I wanted to do on the podcast. And yeah, so I was like, you know, I think I might reopen that, because my brother was literally at the elementary school, still is. He's a fourth grader now. What kind of perfect liaison is going to the elementary school and doing a book signing? They would have done it. I went to the elementary school. Like, they totally would have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to do that because I was embarrassed. I was like, I couldn't tell you why I was embarrassed. I think that's just normal enough 17-year-old behavior.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I don't blame you.
I was like, I would love to go back and like, I'd love to, you know, publish more children's books. I have a million ideas for different children's books. And, so I actually think that I might in the coming months have a resurgence. It's still on Amazon. Like, you know, it's still a published book, but mm-hmm. I was like, I really wish that I pursued that more, you know, with more vigor.
Yeah. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Do you think that that's something that you would do this spring, or cause you're going to be busy from kind of July onwards?
Yeah.
So when would you have the time to like do that?
So obviously, you know, job career is by far and away number one, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, prioritizing that, putting in as many hours as required, but you still have hours free. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Over the weekends and whatnot, when you're not working, you still have time to pursue things like that. And I don't view that as work because I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, writing a book and doing things like that, you know, it's not as time intensive as people think. Like, if you're writing like a novel or like making up a fantasy universe, yeah, you're going to be sitting down and dealing with all of that, you know, but with some of the children's books, I think once you have a concept, it's just kind of writing the script isn't super duper time intensive, but, you know, nitpicking things and communicating back and forth with, you know, illustrators and stuff. I think there's definitely time. Now, you know, like I'd love to have a conversation with your sister or somebody like that, like, you know, somebody who is in the publishing space, because I think it's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, obviously career comes first, number one, but you still have free hours in the day, you know, where, you know, you're able to focus on, you know, other things.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to work in publishing for a long time.
What strayed you away?
I did a publishing internship.
That's a good way to find out.
Yeah. But it was really before that. I just kind of was like, I don't really want to be reading books all day, every day. I think like publishing children's books would be more interesting than publishing novels. But you have to think about the number of manuscripts that are sent in that are full books that people have spent years on. Novels, fantasy worlds, like that they've put their whole being into. And it gets to the publishing house and someone reads two pages of it and says no. And then it might as well have never existed. And also, publishing houses only accept books that they are 90% sure that they're going to make a profit off of. And so that depends on the commercial market of readers, not on whether the book is actually good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a business.
Yeah. And it's really disappointing because it feels like today I have a lot of opinions on contemporary literature. I don't like it.
You mean define contemporary literature for me?
Contemporary literature, I would say, is like the kind of books that sell. So think Colleen Hoover. Think like you're in the airport and you go into a W.H. Smith and it's the books that they have there. Those are the books that people buy and the books that make money. And I think that the quality of the literature is not good.
Okay.
And
you think it has been better?
I think that it was good in the past. I think it was probably good up until, I don't know. I think that there is, it's tough though, because it's like there is a lot of valuable literature. And I think that the author space is definitely more diverse and that those books are highlighted.
Right.
But I think at the same time, it's like the books that are not diverse perspectives or good literature are just kind of like not worth my time. And so
that could just be a preference thing, though.
It is, you know, a preference.
Because like I love fantasy books. That's the only type of book that I read. Like I suck at reading nonfiction books.
Mm-hmm.
I love reading books that transform, like in my head, I'm like watching a TV show in my head or a movie. Like while I'm reading it, I've, you know, built up this whole universe embodied by the book, yada, yada. And like, you know, Sarah J. Maas, I think is her name. She wrote the Throne of Glass series, really, really popular, incredible. Also, like A Court of Roses. Haven't read that one, but know it's very, very popular.
Mm-hmm.
But interesting to hear on the decline of literature. I feel like I don't read enough to have a concrete opinion about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll take it from you, who, you know, like with your sister and you doing, you know, being in publishing, that could definitely be the case.
Yeah. But I don't know. I've always been a total snob about literature or reading. And it's not just because I study English at St. Andrews. I just always have been that way. I'm very particular about what kind of books I like and what kind of books actually hook me. And I think that the kind of books that are being published today are just because the publisher thinks that they're going to make money off of it. And then once a book is published, most of the publishers lose money on those books. The only books that make money are ones that get super lucky. And that's usually by chance.
So what kind of book hooks you?
Well, I'm a history nerd, so I love like books with some form of history. I like books with some form of linguistic art.
So nonfiction, you would say?
No, fiction.
Oh, so fictional history?
Fictional history, but it's like it has to be well written. It has to be nuanced in some regard. I'd say also like right now I'm in a Southern literature hole because that's what I'm writing my diss on. I love, I mean, this is so basic, but I love William Faulkner. I think that his writing style is super complex and it takes, you have to be trained in how to read in order to understand it. It's like reading Shakespeare. You're not going to pick up a Shakespeare novel and understand all the nuances. And so I think, which is unfortunate because then it makes it inaccessible to a lot of people.
Right.
But yeah, I like to read things that make me work for it.
Right. The like, sense of accomplishment and achieving having read something that's difficult.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of it is definitely like a personal pride thing, but also I'm the kind of person who always has to be learning. Like, right. If I'm even in my free time, like, I'm usually not doing something just to relax. Like, if I'm relaxing, I'm doing something where I'm also learning at the same time.
Are you good at relaxing? Because I found a lot of people in this generation are pretty bad at it.
I'm terrible at it.
I'm really bad at it.
I'm horrendous at it. Yesterday, I didn't feel well. And so I went home and I stayed up working, or I was like knitting a scarf, which I guess is relaxing, but it's like I'm still doing something productive, right?
So why do you feel that urge? Is it like, does it come from a sense of wanting to be like intellectually respected, wanting to be successful in your career, wanting to even as simple as like chase dopamine? Because like, and be real, because people have pride. Like I am very much a proponent of it as well. So like, I'm kind of curious as to what your mentality is with that. If you were to really psychoanalyze yourself.
I think I analyze myself all the time, constantly. So I think that it's not from like a career perspective or like a personal pride over other people thing. I think that it's just because I get, whenever I have anything on my schedule, I can't start something and not finish it. And so I'm always thinking about what's due next. What do I have to do right now? What's on my to-do list? And it's like I'm constantly just doing things.
Right.
And it's like if I relax, there's always that voice in the back of my head like, oh, you have an essay due in a month.
Right.
Or so-and-so needs you to get this thing to them by the end of Tuesday. And so that's always kind of where my mind is. And I feel guilty when I relax because there's always something else to be done.
I can very much connect with that. Like I would always be the guy to come home from school and I couldn't play video games until I did my homework, because I was like I couldn't enjoy doing something knowing that I had something looming over me that I had to do.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a blessing and a curse, because my parents tell me all the time like, Cole, you gotta chill. And like I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like I wish I knew how to chill. I don't know why that I am the way that I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe that's an age thing as well, because when you are in your senior year of college, you know, there's so many uncertainties that you're trying to manage and juggle, and, you know, figuring out so many potential hypotheticals that maybe when life gets a bit more routine, it's easier to relax and do things like that. But when things are so up in the air, you know, maybe something like that is more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like since high school, life has always been kind of uncertain like that, because when you're in high school, it's like you're trying to do well in school, either because you want rewards from the school or to get into a good school,
right.
College. And then when you're in university, you're trying to work towards something, whether that's good grades, good extracurriculars, or a good job for after school. So it's like this constant.
There's a constant horizon.
Constant always, for 8 years.
Yeah, there's a cool, you know, there's always like a next step to look forward to. And, you know, oh, when I'm at, you know, high school, yeah, everything that I'm doing right now is for college.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm at college, everything that I'm doing is for my first career, to make sure that I'm successful in whatever industry that is of interest to me. So I feel like, you know, I'm trying to definitely live life that way, because you want to be forward thinking. But at the same time, I am definitely trying to, cliche, smell the roses, yada, yada. Because I do think it is true. I think that there have been periods of my life that I reflect back on that I was doing things that were really cool and really unique, and I didn't even enjoy or take time to really experience what it is I was doing because I was so caught up in what was coming after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think that is, you know, a factor as well. Yeah, I think definitely trying to live more presently is definitely something that I'm trying to be cognizant of.
That's my word for 2024, present.
Oh, that's right. You have a word. You're like my mom. We were like sitting around. We were on vacation. And it was like the first day of dinner. And she's like, okay, everyone, give me one word for 2024.
And what's your word?
Oh, my God. Well, now you're putting me on the spot. I think like I had a word that was, what did I say? Probably like opportunistic or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a way of like, oh, just jumping on everything. In a way of just like, I need to just figure things out. I need to storyboard. I'm lucky that I really like in the direction that I'm going. I really like, you know, really enjoy finance, really enjoyed what I did, could totally see myself, you know, there long term. So really enjoyed that. But also just figuring everything out. You know, my likes, dislikes, got to storyboard my career a little bit, not because I'm making any immediate decisions, not at all. I'm going to, you know, take my time and talk to people who know more than I do to try to get that context. But I just got to figure it out like anybody else. Sound like any other senior in college, you know, everyone's like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, where I'm going. Like that's a very, you know, I guess normal set of steps to have.
Yeah. Don't get lost in the sauce.
do not. It is so easy to get lost in the sauce. It is. It's so easy to just fall into, like, yeah, then you're on Instagram Reels for 2 hours and you're like, what just happened? Like, yeah. I just watched, like, oh my God. I literally feel like I need to rip myself away sometimes. Like, I literally need to, like,
I know,
be
same.
Like, okay, the next one, I watch it and I turn off my phone. I, like, toss it across the room. Like, yeah, like, I literally feel like I broke. I don't even know. Like it's like when you, like, crack your back and you, like, oh, you, like, get that release or something. Like, I feel like I literally had to, like, detach myself from Instagram Reels. And I'm like, that's kind of terrifying.
It is terrifying.
Because I remember I'm not going to use TikTok anymore. Now all I do is scroll Reels.
Same. So I was like,
I was like, this is useless. I've achieved nothing in this transition from TikTok to Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's the same. That's why I try to play chess a ton.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it was a couple years ago. First year, second semester, so 2020, I guess, or 2021, I got tendonitis in both my hands. And so was terrible. Like, I could barely use my hands. Like, you know, I had to open doors with two hands, brush my teeth with two hands.
Whoa.
Super unfortunate that it was in both of my hands.
That's terrible.
And I was like, I love video games. Like, I really enjoy them. And I was like, okay, I can't play video games because I can't use my hands. And I was like, all right, well, what can I do? And I was like, oh, I guess I'll start playing chess. And that was when The Queen's Gambit came out. So it was all the rage. Everyone was like, oh, playing chess. And great show, by the way. But
great show.
Yeah, I still play now. Like, I love chess. And I think maybe it's not true. Maybe it is true. I feel marginally more productive when I spend my free time playing chess instead of scrolling Reels. Because I was like, at least maybe I feel like I'm engaging my brain more. Mm-hmm. Or I'm, like, learning something that I am super interested in. Even if it is a game, it's like quite a complex one, I suppose. Like, you know, I feel like I'm it's more productive in my head, at least it is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
totally. Well, thank you so much for coming on The Worm, Cole.
Yeah, this was awesome. I'm honored to be one of your first guests, as you know. But yeah, this was incredible. Thanks so much.
Yeah, and if you're listening, make sure to check out Cole's podcast. That's Across the Board. Where can people find it?
Anywhere. Apple Podcasts, you know, Spotify, any other niche podcast thing that you can use, Overcast. But maybe we'll do a reverse crossover.
Ooh.
Yeah, now it's time to analyze Ward. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be the driver of the boat.
Okay. Do you have an Instagram for the
Across the Board as well? I think it's maybe Across the Board _ like STA for, like, St. Andrews. But if you just type in Across the Board, it'll be there.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Okay, well, to those of you listening, I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Worm and hearing from Cole. To stay updated on all things The Worm, follow the Instagram, which is @theworm_podcast. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. Bye.